And like we said at the beginning, we do have a speaker this evening, and it actually falls on me, I'm pleased to say, to introduce them. So I've known this individual a little while. We kind of met in the course of service here and there, and we've had some great conversations about the nature of what that means and the nature of what it means to be a member of NA and all those kind of good things. And I do know that he's whenever service is available, this individual will step up, which he's done this evening. So I'm incredibly grateful that Tam has jumped in tonight to come and share his experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. He's going to share for 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with, his journey to into and through Narcotics Anonymous. So Tam, without further ado, over to you, my friend, and welcome and thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for chairing. Thank you for the readers. And thank you, Elaine, for hijacking me half an hour before the meeting. I appreciate it. As you might gather, sarcasm is one of my defects. Thank you anyway. When you say to me it's 40 to 45 minutes, I was like, wow. That's pretty long, isn't it? But not really. It's not really a long time, is it? When you use drugs from the age of 11 until 45 years of age for 34 years, it's not really a long time, is it? 45 minutes, 40 to 45 minutes. But if I get stuck, I will let you know. A little bit of my experience. A little bit, Jesus Christ. Broken from a broken home. Mum left when I was two. And my father, who used to be an engineer for Rolls-Royce, was given the duty, well, he took the duty of bringing up four children, two girls, two boys, ages of two, three, five, and six. In the East End of Glasgow, and he had to quit his job when he split up with my mum. And she moved away not that far. She only moved about half a mile up the road with another man. And because my older brother, he wasn't my father's son, my father said that she could take him with her. So he went and lived with my mum, and us four with my dad. Now, getting brought up in the 70s and 80s in Parkhead in Glasgow was not really a nice place to be. There was a lot of gang fighting, a lot of alcohol, drunk, and a lot of sectarianism for people who don't understand there's been Celtic and Rangers. So that's the environment I was brought up in. And it's only now that I understand that there was love, but it was never shown. We were never told that we were loved, or we never got the. Well, I'm only two, so getting brought up at that age, I need a mother. Well, the rest of us need a mother to be showing empathy and compassion and guidance and love. And my dad was a man who was like, get up and get on with it. No, he was very, my dad was very humble. He was very kind. I had a very, very soft side to him. Very passive. And I've got the traits that I've got them off him. But as you can imagine, getting brought up in that sort of environment, you had to learn to be tough. And I wasn't tough. I was a frightened young child who didn't know how to express himself. Couldn't go and say, "Oh, Dad, my feelings," or "feel this and I feel frightened." I was a latch. We were latchkey kids, if you don't know what that is. It's where Dad used to go out, and he would put the key on a piece of string behind the door, and you put your hand through the letterbox to get the key to let yourself in. And the rest of the community, well, it's a close in Glasgow, where we lived in tenement buildings. So the rest of the five families, including we were six families that lived in our building, all sort of looked out for us as well. So it was a pretty rough environment. We didn't get my dad wouldn't lift his hand, so we never get a beating or anything like that. It was, but I seen so much fighting and arguing and in the streets. So when I got to the age of 11, and I had my first substance, which was alcohol. It was cider in Carlsberg. It's called a snake bite. And I remember spewing my ring up. And my dad was a functioning alcoholic. He would go out every night between the hours of 7 and 8 o'clock, and one of us had to go and collect him at the pub at 11 o'clock at night, because the pub shut at 11 at that time. So we had to go, somebody had to go and get him every night. And my mum, she was an alcoholic, and she left, started drinking vodka. And she used to pop round every Monday, because Monday was payday in East End. The Monday book used to go to post office and collect your Monday book. So they would have a wee drink and a catch up, and which I found a bit fucking strange, to be honest. Sorry, I might swear a bit, so yeah, it's in context, really, I think. So I realised that I didn't like alcohol. So the next thing started was buzzing glue and sniffing gas. And I did that. I didn't live for it. No, I did it when I had the opportunity, because I didn't like who I was, because I always wanted to be somewhere else. I always wanted to be something different. I seen families, and I wanted to be in them families. Always wanted what other people had. And I even realised that at school, I wouldn't learn anything me at school, because I was too afraid to ask for help. I was very, very afraid at school. The reason I was afraid is because as my older brother lived with my mum, he seen a lot of violence with my stepdad. Who used to beat my mum. So the way he grew up different from me. So he grew up and he was hard as nails, and he was in gangs that were away from where my dad lived. So anytime we ever went to see my mum, which wasn't very often, maybe once every 2 weeks or something, I was always looking over my shoulder, because everybody didn't like my brother. They always wanted to attack him or beat him up, so I used to get the beatings when I was growing up. So it was really, really a tough environment to be brought up in. A lot of traumatic events. And my two sisters, they moved in with my mum one at a time, and both of them got sexually abused my stepdad, which when they left and came back to my dad's, they brought it back to my dad's house, where I was sexually abused by my two sisters. However, they didn't know any better. They were only 12 and 15. So I thought for years it was my fault. I was only 9 and 11 at the time, 9, 11 or 12. So I was had so much emotion and feeling and stuff going on in my brain. I ended up getting a wee job as a milk boy at 15, and I started taking codeine Linctus. Now I'll take a few people back who are the older generation here. and used to buy in the chemist. So when I started taking this, I found some confidence, and I found some, well, false confidence and false self-esteem. And the joker would come out in me, and I could talk to ladies, and I became a bit of an arsehole. And then he stopped selling it in the pharmacy, and so I had to go to the hydrocodone. So from the age of 15 to the age of 21, I was swallowing, taking a lot of hydrocodone, 30, 40 times 50 a day. And I was robbing and breaking into houses and doing all the things that you do to get substances. Then my mum kept, she got a beating off my stepdad, and she came back to my dad's house, and she was there a few days, and she fell, like she went under on the floor, and her rib punctured her lung, and she died. And when that day that happened, I went and started taking heroin. I was already an addict, no, it was just the progression where I was going next, and I didn't need an excuse, but that was my excuse at that time. And I just went on that run. My dad never left his bed when my mum died. He stayed in his bed for 6 months and died, drunk himself to death. So I'd lost both parents at the age of 21. Not that I ever had my mum. I still got a lot of, I've got a lot of acceptance over it, but still hurts that she left all of us. I've wrote about it. Probably get to that. And then it just spiraled. Prison. And I would, geographicals, I moved to London. I would take anywhere I went, I took this diseased mind with me, so I couldn't get away from it. Then I started using crack and methadone. The injector, I'd swallow, I'd snort it, I'd stick it up my arse, I'd do anything to get that substance in me. And while all this was going on, it showed me how much I use women, just like I use substances, because I was using women because I needed somebody to look after me, to cook, clean, and give me a home, a stable home that I thought, that's how much in denial and delusion I was in. And with having gone with a lot of a few women, I've got four children, all born in addiction. So that's the story. Oh, that is the story. Just nuts. But then 2007, 2012, I was what? Was that easy? I'm trying to think. I was 42. Yeah, I was 42. 42, 40, 42, 43. And somebody introduced me to NE. So I went to NE, and I went in, and I looked about, and I stayed for a couple of meetings. Excuse me. And I looked about, and I seen people there who were drinking alcohol and smoking cannabis and snorting about cocaine, and I disqualified myself because I thought, you just don't use drugs like me, you know. And I'll go back to when I was 17. My dad put me in a rehabilitation center at 17 years of age, and I was clean for about 6 weeks, but that didn't work because I wasn't ready. So I get to NE, and I looked and I thought, nah, I'm out. I still wasn't ready. Fast forward to 2000, next year, 2013. My sons, I've got two daughters and two sons. I like naming my kids because, I just like naming my kids because it puts their face in my head when I just say my kids. I've got a daughter, Stephanie. She lives in Glasgow. She's 36. I've got two sons, Jordan and Liam, 29, 28. Jordan's a prison officer. Liam's an electrician who lives in Australia with his wife and my grandson. And I've got a daughter, Angel, and she's pregnant at the moment, my second grandchild. So these kids have been through a lot with me. They've seen me use all of life. But I had the two sons to one woman and the other two to other women. So four kids with three different women. And I was a present father for my two sons, not for my oldest daughter. I've been a present father for my youngest daughter as well. So while my two sons were growing up, I always wanted to take them on holiday. So I saved up some money. I'd moved to Morecambe in 2000, not in 1996 in England, and still used for years. I would either sell substances or I would be a loan shark to make money. And this in 2013, Liam was 15 and Jordan was 17. There's 20 months between them. And I says, "Mon lads, we're going away." I'd never been on holiday in my life. I'd never been in a plane. And we all get a week in Bulgaria, Sunny Beach, and I take seven bottles of methadone with me. I wasn't injecting at this time. I was taking 80 mL methadone a day. I was taking about between 40 and 50 Blue Valium a day, and I was smoking weed. And I thought I was doing all right because I wasn't injecting. And off we go. We go to Bulgaria, Sunny Beach, and I think this sort of changed me. Apart from my sons, I'll tell you a bit about that, but I seen a palm tree for the first time, a real live palm tree in a sunny place, and I loved it. But I went, and for a week, this is me, I don't really drink me. I thought I went all inclusive, and I was hammered for a full week, and I thought I had the time of my life. And my son, youngest son Liam, took a picture of me on his phone. And I had a sex on the beach in one hand and a phone in the other, and my head was stuck in a bowl of spaghetti bolognese. And he showed me the next morning, and I went, "Look at the state of you." And you'd think that maybe changed something, but it didn't. I came back. And for a full year, I did the same again. I never changed. And then the next year, it was 2014, was my change. Yeah. I says, "Right, lads, off we go. We're going to Bulgaria 2 weeks this time." And the youngest one says to me, Liam says, "I'm not going, you embarrass me." And that hurt. That was like, men will understand this, it was like a kick in the balls. I think it was the first real feelings I had for a long time. But I went, okay. He wanted to go to Magaluf with his friends. I gave them the money, had the money to go there. And me and my oldest son and his friend went to Bulgaria for 2 weeks. Took 14 bottles of methadone with me. And I didn't find out till later that I could have bought Valium in the pharmacy out the chemist, but I didn't have any Valium with me. I thought, I'll go the same again, all inclusive and drink. And when I got there, the first 10 days was really good, and then the Valium withdrawal kicked in. Oh, that was harsh. And my oldest son was dabbing my head. I never left the room for the last few days. I thought fucking police and helicopters were following me everywhere. I was tripping out my nut, and I just says, "Right, I'm done. I can't do this anymore." I was 45. I was 44. I said, "I can't do this anymore." And my oldest son sort of laughed. "Yeah, okay, Dad." But we came back, and I went into a service who'd been giving me a prescription for 19 years of methadone. And I says, "I want to stop." And they laughed. The guy laughed at me and said, "Never, no, Utah." I said, "Yeah, I'm done. Don't want to do this anymore." And there was three gentlemen in there who went to ANA. And he says to me, "Tom, you need to go to ANA. You've got any is a place that will sort you. You've got too much trauma in your life. You need something. You need to write about it, and you need to do what it says. And I was like, oh no, I just want to stop using drugs, mate. What do you mean I need to write about this? She said, we're not going to tell you about that just yet. Go to NA. So I went to NA, and I stayed in NA for about 7 months, 7, 8 months, and I got cut down in my prescription. And I got to 35 mil, and they put me into a detox center. And I was in a detox center, and I got clean the 18th of May, 2015. And I've never used since. And they sent me to a rehab. I only stayed in the rehab for 12 days because I'd be going to NA and I'd be listening. And I was just ready. I knew what my life had been like all the years. I wanted to change. I wanted to live a better life. I wanted to try. I was willing. I was so willing. And there's one thing I've always had since I got here. I've always had fear that I don't want to get back to that. That's why I keep coming to NA. It's one of the reasons I keep coming back. Fear. Fear's in me. I don't want to get back to that. And then I came out the rehab on a Sunday night. And another thing that used to piss me off, I used to see people standing up and getting a key ring, getting 30 days and 60 days. And I couldn't even get a fucking white one because I wasn't clean yet. No, it used to piss me off. No. I had willingness. I got one, the right one, because I had the desire to addiction free. I had the desire to stop using, but I wanted clean ones. And I got out on the Sunday, got my first clean key tag, key ring, whatever you call it, what you call them. And that night, I remember my sons coming up to get me that day. They came up to visit me in the rehab, and I had all my stuff packed, and the two of them shit themselves. He said, "Dad, don't leave." I says, "Look, I ain't using. I'm going to NA." And I did that night, and I got myself a sponsor that night. And he came to my house the next day, and I started step up that day. And I've been through the steps 3 times. I'm on my step 12 now. But for the first time I'd done the steps where I was clean, and I took it as a writing exercise. I'd never completed anything in my life, and I wanted to complete that, and I wasn't practicing it because I'd got clean and I found my libido, and I just was a bit nuts. And a lot of things have happened since then, since I've been in recovery. The last 10 years haven't been easy. But it'd have been easier than fucking using, I'll tell you that. And I look back on all these things where my brother gets stabbed to death. He gets stabbed 39 times for £40 a crack. My mum and dad died of this addiction. So I didn't have the excuses anymore because since I've been in recovery, my sister's passed away with this disease. I've had medical problems, quite a few. I got cancer when I was 6 and a half years clean, stage 4 throat cancer. That's why I talk like this. I've not, don't think I've got a beautiful Barry White voice like this. This came at a cost. This came at a cost of stage 4 cancer, and I went through chemo and radiotherapy. All my children are in my life. Well, not all of them. My oldest one's in Glasgow. I don't see her much. But the other ones are really in my life. I went and watched my oldest son play rugby yesterday. I speak video call my other son in Australia on Monday, and I spoke to him yesterday too. And I've seen my youngest daughter today. So this has given me unbelievable gifts, this place. But I've had relationships breakups. I just broke up with a relationship. Less than 2 weeks ago, but I won't use. I won't use. I'm too full of fear. I get some medication off the doctor because of the chemo and radiotherapy and the pain that's in my throat because I had a tracheostomy in my throat. But I manage it by doing what the doctor suggests. It's just lines of upper brain from my gallbladder because that was removed, and I tell you a little bit from my neck, from my nerves in my neck that had to be broke up and stitched, fixed. I've been in remission for the past 3 years, or past 2.5 years, and that was a battle and a half. But even when I was going through that, I used the program. I was on Zoom a lot. I love my sponsor. I've had a couple of sponsors. I've not really spoke much about my higher power. I believe so much. I had so much faith in my higher power because, and this is the reason. Anybody that can get through the life that I've been through, and still be living, there's got to be something watching me. There's got to be something that's guiding me here. Because I couldn't do all this on my own. This has been one hell of a journey in the past 10 years. I've learned to drive in recovery. I've learned to do everything. The last 10 years has taught me so much, taught me so much more than I learned in my first 45 years. It's taught me unbelievable things about my patterns, my motives and things. And it's taught me that I'm a really nice, kind, thoughtful guy. And I still struggle with the love thing. And I still struggle with it. But I went and seen one of my friends the other day, and she's a psychotherapist, and she says to me, how can you love somebody when you need to have the love relationship for yourself? And I knew this before, but I'd let it slide. I was letting my integrity go, I was letting my passiveness creep in. And when I'm a strong, recovering NA member, living by boundaries and living by honesty and living by spiritual principles, my life is simple. Because this has taught me how to live. I've got friends that I never ever had. I never knew what it was to have a friend when I was growing up. I'd only sort of a, if I wasn't getting anything out of you, you wouldn't really be any use to me. But today I've got friends who I spend time with who love me. And it's not all through coming to Narcotics Anonymous. It just blows my mind. And I have forgot this recently because I've been sitting in a little bit of poor me and self-pity. But today I try and just live for today. And I got up this morning and I went on a meeting and I shared and I listened because I couldn't, I haven't been listening recently. I've been hearing it, but I've not been listening. And then I went to a face-to-face meeting today and it was in a conscience, which was great. Consciences have taught me so much. Taught me to have a voice. Service has taught me to have a voice. I've done so much service for NA. I've went to region, of area. I've done all the service positions that you can, and we're putting a unity day on in Morecambe, a 10-year unity day. And it's so lovely because I remember that me and four other people opened the first meeting in Morecambe 10 years ago. And there's 3 years left. Two of the guys died, and they went back out there. And the meetings have been thriving in Morecambe. I've got a couple of meetings here, and they've been thriving for 10 years, which is so good. And we've had a couple of unity days, but we're having that 10-year celebration on June. And I was in that conscience today, and it's just like, it's just a feeling of God is sort of a guiding me back. I realize God will do things for me that I can't do for myself. Oh, what that may be, I don't know. No, well, I do know. Like I was doing a job working in a children's home for about 5 years, and I was sick to death there. And I was like, God, I want to quit this job. And I just hear the wee voice, let it go. Don't worry, I've got you. And I let it go. And a couple of weeks later, he puts a job in my path where I'm driving a big 4-ton van. And I'm driving all over Britain delivering designer kitchens, which I love doing. It was an amazing job. And I met a lady and things changed. But that's what I love about any. It's always you're always subject to change. Yeah. And it's just give me an open heart. It's give me an open mind most of the time. Because I am a human being. I ain't perfect. Far, far, far from it. I just got up, do my shit. I do my step tens every night. I try and live this program. Some days better than others. I'm just trying to think how long I've been gone for. I've been gone for about 40 minutes, I don't know, maybe 35 minutes. Well,
You good, Tom?
am I good, yeah? Yeah, okay, so, yeah, I'll go ahead quick with the step work. Step work has taught me that the past is the past is the past. And I can have a wee look at it. But I don't dwell on it. If you dwell on it, you're not living in today. Don't live in the future. Because it hasn't happened yet. I haven't got a clue what it's going to be. That's why it's just for today. I write down stuff when I do step work to see my patterns, to see my behaviour and to see my motives and to try and check my thinking. That's why I sit down and do step work. I sit down with sponsees, the sponsors sat down with me, and I try and get them in touch with their feelings and their emotions, their emotions or feelings. And I try and guide them the way I was guided, the way I'm still guided. I need you. I need you so much. I need any. Any doesn't need me. It does. Sorry, it does need me. If I was to die today or tomorrow, Annie would still be here. So it doesn't need me like that, but it doesn't need me in the bigger picture. I'm so grateful for this program. Elaine, I will say thank you. I am very grateful for you asking me. It got me out of my own head for 40 odd minutes, which is great because my head is fucking dangerous. Fuck me. Things that I go through in my head are just not cricket. And I think yous can identify with that. Yeah, I turned 10 on the 18th of May, which is fucking unbelievable. I can't believe that. I'm nearly 10 years clean. Wow. Fucking hell, I couldn't get 10 minutes at one point. Fucking brilliant. Thanks for allowing me to share, and I will leave it there, Steve. I hope that's been all right.